Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Unfiltered Real Talk podcast. I'm really excited about today's conversation. It's with a friend of mine, and she is passionate about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, and she wants to talk to us about that. So I have been doing a couple episodes on persons with special needs, and my guest is someone who is working in the area of human services, and I'm just excited to have her here to have this conversation with us. So welcome, Andrea Erasmus. I'm really happy to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here.
I would like you to introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us about why you were passionate about today's conversation around FASD.
Okay, so my name is Andrea Erasmus. I've been working with children and families and vulnerable children and families in different capacities in Alberta for the last 7 years. I'm also South African.
Yes.
I'm here to represent
our African sisters.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And I'm very passionate about FASD for the simple reason that it is 100% preventable. In many things, in terms of prenatal health, there's many things a woman does not have control over in terms of bringing a child into this world. Yes. But FASD is completely preventable. And that is why I'm here to spread the word. I want to talk about it. There's a lot of misinformation. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of shame. And let's talk about it.
So let's talk about it. So give us a little bit more background information, the basics. I want to start out by letting our listeners know that we are in no way physicians. We are in no way medical practitioners. We are not speaking from any professional perspective, but simply out of a place of passion and personal experience for the issue of FASD. So please make sure that you understand that we are not here to diagnose anyone or to suggest any kind of medical recommendation. Our discussion today is 100% from our personal background. So let's start out, Andrea, by talking about your understanding of FASD. I did do some research, and a lot of the information that I got was from CDC, Center of Disease Control and Prevention. But I'd like you to have a quick chat with us about what FASD, why you said it's preventable, because you just said it is preventable, and other general information that you think moms and everyone else should be aware of.
Right. So, I mean, you talk about CDC, that's a great resource. And I'm just going to go to Health Canada's website because it's where we're both located right now.
Absolutely.
So FASD, as Health Canada defines it, is a brain injury that can occur when an unborn baby is exposed to alcohol. It's a lifelong disorder with effects that include physical, mental, behavioral, and learning disabilities. And because it's fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, these disabilities as a spectrum, it can range from mild to severe. Obviously, there's no known safe amount of alcohol.
That's
because
right.
You can't test, you know, your these lab tests on human babies.
On human babies, yeah, or pregnant people, absolutely.
Exactly. So there's no safe amount of known alcohol for a mother, but we do know FASD is specifically caused by alcohol exposure in utero, and it's the leading known cause of preventable developmental disabilities in Canada. Taking it back to South Africa, global research says South Africa has the highest rates of FASD on the planet.
What?
Yes.
Okay, this is news to me.
Yes, and we can talk about that in the myths.
Let's
and the
talk
African.
About that, because we are African, and
yes.
I like to start from home in any conversation I'm doing, because I think it's important to address our people. Charity begins at from home is what my Nigerian mm-hmm. people say.
That's what
Why is South Africa? Oh my goodness.
So, I pulled up some numbers. So like the global prevalence they estimate, and FASD is also part of the diagnosis of FASD, is the disclosure of the mother admitting to drinking while pregnant, right? Like how can you be diagnosed if nobody says they did this? So the global prevalence they estimate, and of course this will never be an exact science because there's mm-hmm. no way 100% no, is about 8 per 1,000 births. So every 8 babies per 1,000. But South Africa, depending where you are in South Africa, so the Western Cape province has the highest rates, but it ranges anywhere from 29 to 290 per 1,000 live births.
This is a lot.
Yes.
Of babies with FASD.
And it's intergenerational, right?
Yes.
And we can talk about the cultural norms. We can talk about the social attitudes. We can mm-hmm. talk about poverty, socioeconomic things, how it all ties in. But the point is South Africa, as what they believe, is the highest rates in the world. And it like eclipses Ireland, which they thought is the second highest. And then some of it is historical, you know, due to South Africa's history of colonization,
yes,
white rule.
Of course.
There were policies in place where the farmers paid the farm laborers in alcohol. people per week. And that kind of indentured that. That did get outlawed, but the point is it also creates a system of addiction, a system of dependence, and a system of normalcy in using alcohol, right? South Africa has a high prevalence of illegal liquor stores. So liquor stores that aren't licensed, aren't regulated. You can buy whatever there, and they're probably selling to whoever there because it's not a regulated thing. These illegal facilities where they're serving and selling liquor. So there's, you know, they're not going to be checking ID, and there's not the regulations around that. And there's also like a big social component because alcohol has been such a big part of the country's history and the country's current activities that it's just, it's normalized in many senses in many places.
Yeah, it is. I remember watching a video, and I think I might have sent it to you as well, where I saw a bunch of what appeared to be high school kids consuming some kind of alcoholic hand sanitizer or, you know, some sort. And I just remember thinking, wow, like, I didn't realize that this is such a big and serious issue in South Africa.
Yes, it is a huge issue. And another issue is also from like a government policy perspective in countries like Canada, you know, United States, UK, New Zealand, Australia, FASD and prenatal drink alcohol exposure seen as a public health issue. There's a lot of math. You know, you go to the public toilet, a bathroom in a restaurant, you see the posters on the stalls. It's seen as a public health issue here, where in South Africa, there isn't that same level of education and awareness. And in many countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, we know there's much higher rates of drinking.
So I'm going to get into that conversation a little bit later, where I'll ask you what you think, what policy measures or what policy makers can use to address this problem. But before we get into that, let's talk about the myths and misconceptions around FASD, because you talked about stigma a little bit in the beginning. So let's get into that first.
I just want to start off, I'm sure this goes without saying, most people know this, but when a woman gets pregnant, the baby develops from the inside out, right? The embryo develops the brain and the spinal tube, the spinal column, and then everything else, you know, fingers, toes, fingernails, that kind of stuff comes later. But the brain develops first, and the neural tube, it's called. So that develops first. So many women don't figure out they're pregnant until they're 4 to 6 weeks along, if not later, right? Yeah. So that kind of, in general, and this is, again, not a socioeconomic thing, this is just a general statement. So if you're casually drinking or drinking often, you probably, and in general, you're not going to know you're pregnant until you're 4 to 6 weeks along, and we know that the baby's brain developed first.
Exactly.
You see how it's all kind of tied in. But some of the common myths, and I mean, I hear these myths here, this isn't a uniquely African thing, I hear these myths like all the time in my work, is that there's a safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant, or I only drank until I found out I was pregnant, right? Like that, those, you still drink while pregnant. And then also, there's also ideas or myths that certain types of alcohol are safer than others. Like it's okay to drink coolers or beer because that's like a, you know, 4%, 5% versus, you know, 40% vodka, right? So there's those myths around like certain types of alcohol.
So there is no safe alcohol level for consumption.
Well, ethanol is ethanol, right? Yes. Whether it's 5% or 40%. It's still the same chemical.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot. And then again, the stigma, we know there is, you know, overrepresentation within lower income families or socioeconomic status when it comes to FASD, but it's not a unique thing tied to socioeconomic status, right? It is tied to alcohol exposure. So there are the stigmas or people making assumptions that it has to do with low income families or stereotypes such as it only impacts people of color or certain race to be the ones who always do this. Another, I guess, myth would be that all people with FASD have like physical features displaying FASD. A very small percent of people have what's called the sentinel facial features, such as the smaller eyes, the small top lip, the smooth upper lip. And that's a very small percentage of people. So people assume like, well, everyone who has FASD has
will look a certain way. Yeah.
And that's why it's an invisible disability, because most people with FASD look just like everybody else. There's another misconception that adults cannot get diagnosed with FASD, that it's only a diagnosis you obtain in childhood. There might be more challenges because, I mean, again, you need to talk to the mother of the adult, but adults can certainly get diagnosed with FASD. a big one is all people with FASD that are diagnosed with FASD are the same in terms of disability. And that's a big misconception because prenatal exposure, it's not a one size fits all thing. No two people have the same form or same, FASD does not look the same in every person. And no two people have the same strengths and the same challenges. And it's unique to that individual.
Thank you very much for that. So let's start talking about supports. How can we support young children and youth to have a better quality of life, you know, if it does turn out that they've been diagnosed with FASD? What is it that we can do as citizens? What is it that parents can do or other caregivers and community members? How can we better support young people with FASD?
It starts off with the young person. It starts off with being honest with the medical professionals and the professionals in, you know, the young person's life right off the bat. If you are a mother and you did, drink while pregnant and your child was exposed prenatally, I understand there's definitely like shame
and stigma, right?
There's the guilt, the blame and shame, and then you feel even worse. And that might make you feel more inclined to keep that information to yourself.
And then that's exactly why I'm asking this question, is how can we support them to then support your kids by coming out and saying, you know what, I did consume alcohol when I was pregnant.
I'd say it's about coming to the understanding that this information, even though it may hurt you or may make feel sad to discuss it, it's for your child's best interest, right? This is 100% for your child's future to get connected to the right resources and the right supports to help your child learn better in school. They might need an individualized learning plan. In Canada and Alberta, they pay for educational assessments, which can pinpoint exactly what would help your child learn best, what kind of supports they need. So it's about being honest right off from the start, which may be hard to do, but you need to understand, for example, like we're contrasting African countries versus, for example, Canada and many westernized countries, quote unquote, westernized countries. There are supports. It is a public health issue. So there are supports and policies and procedures built in place to support the individual. So it's about being honest because, you know, children could be connected to things like such as pediatricians, individualized learning plans, educational assessments to make sure they're able to learn properly. Pediatricians can help them with their focus, their mental health, speech and language pathologists if that's needed. And then also very important is training for parents, support for parents, because we do know some children, again, it's a spectrum, may be more challenging to parent, may have more unique behaviors that may be a bit more difficult.
Let's talk about some of that spectrum. So let's talk about some of the challenges or some of the needs or special needs that these kids will require if they had FASD. Because you've mentioned speech.
I would say the biggest things would be learning, right? So memory, cognitive capacity, retention. Okay. Also, it's like that abstract versus concrete thinking, like understanding concepts, social cues, like socializing, that might be a struggle for some people too. Focus is often a struggle. And that's why it's so important to be diagnosed properly.
Exactly.
It's like, are you hyperactive? Do you have ADHD? Maybe. Is it maybe connected? Are there some other struggles too? Mm-hmm. And then you talk about the primary disabilities, which are like the things that we're discussing, these specific issues, but then also the secondary disabilities, like later on in life, like now you're struggling because you're different in school and you're not able to learn. And does that lead to bullying, you know, things like that? And then how does that impact like later in life, like mental health, greater predisposition to addictions, trouble school, trouble. We do know, like, for example, because this is such a well-researched topic in Canada, individuals with FASD certainly make up a large portion of people incarcerated, right? People with children's services involvement, people on income support. So it is, for example, in the province of Alberta, they estimate FASD costs the province about $900 million a year due to incarceration, children's services, income support, educational support, disability supports, all of that big umbrella, which we also know most African countries don't have this big social net available for people.
Absolutely. And I like to remind our listeners just here really quickly, if you're listening to this and you know someone who has FASD, or maybe you don't know they have FASD, PTSD specifically, but you feel like there may be some struggle that might need some further analysis by a professional, I'd like to encourage you to just have a conversation with that individual, of course, in a very kind and understanding way. And if it's somebody that you're not close to, then maybe have somebody that you feel is close to them to have a conversation with that individual about them or your child, something that you've noticed. Or maybe you're just a parent right now and you're listening to this and you feel like you are in this, you feel like this is something that relates to you, this resonates with you. So I would encourage you to visit your physician, visit your family doctor and see if there is something that they can do to help you support your young person. And it's okay. And like Andrea has just mentioned, there is stigma attached to consuming alcohol. And it's difficult. It's very understandable that it's difficult to say, you know what, I messed up. I did this. I was drinking and it's all my fault. But what Andrea is saying here and what's resonating with me and what I feel is the key and the meat of our conversation today is if you know you were consuming alcohol and you can see that something's up with your kid, the only way you can help your kid is owning up to the mistakes you've made. And if you're in this part of the world, then that's just going to your physician. If you're, you know, if you're in a place like Canada, Alberta, just going to your family doctor and having a conversation with them and saying, you know what, this is what happened when I was pregnant and I know better and I want to support my kid. What services are out there? And by the time you start to access those services that are available to us, available to you as well, you will be able to better support your child. So that's what we're talking about. And that's the focus and center of our conversation is that you take action, is that you do something. So Andrea, what I want to do right now is bring it home. So I know we've kind of done like a side-by-side analysis talking about Africa and then talking about Canada, which is where we're at. I also now want to focus our conversation on our African audience. As you and I know, sister, there's a lot of things that African people just pretend doesn't happen. And I'm sorry if I'm going to offend a few people here, but I feel like I am well in my right to speak about this as an African woman, because there's just so many things when it comes to these kinds of issues, this medical serious issues that we just discount. We just say, you know, the child will grow out of it or whatever it is that we're going to say. So I want you to speak some wisdom right here and talk about our African people. What advice do you have for African parents raising your children who might have FASD or other forms of special needs?
I would start off by saying I also recognize that ideas around alcohol, alcohol use while pregnant, alcohol use socially differ, you know, culture to culture. And the norms, although maybe in other countries it's kind of frowned upon while drinking while pregnant, in some parts it's probably not frowned upon mm-hmm. as much, right? And
absolutely.
I recognize that. And then it's easy to put it all on the women while the child has these struggles because of you. What did you drink while you're pregnant? But I ask, like, what do the men bring? You know, this is your partner, mm-hmm. this is your husband. How are the men supporting their wives or their partners? And how are they supporting their children? Because it's not just on the women, it's on the family as a whole. This
absolutely.
Is a family
and
unit.
This is why I targeted my conversation to parents. So both the husband and the wife or the man and the woman. Yeah. It's definitely not a woman's problem. Just because she's the person carrying the baby doesn't mean she should be the only person carrying all the stigma, the shame, the blame and all of that. That is huge for one person to handle.
Yeah. And is it even a stigma within your within the community? It may or may mm-hmm. not be, right? That's separate.
Right?
But I mean, I think it ties in, how do we support our women differently, right?
Okay.
Can we come to a place where we understand that drinking and consuming alcohol while pregnant is not okay for the baby and it's not okay long term? Can we understand that? And if we can all agree that alcohol while pregnant is bad, how do we support the pregnant women? Because if alcohol is the big part of the social life or the family life, if it's such a big part of your day-to-day existence, how do we support our women and how do we do things differently as a community, right? Not just the husband in general. What
Absolutely.
Are we going to do differently? And can we come to the understanding? Because, you know, it's not realistic to say, well, South Africa needs to make alcohol or FASD a public health issue like it is in the Western world. That may or may never happen. But what can individuals do? How can we spread awareness, spread education, and talk about the risks and talk about helping break the cycle, right? Because it just takes a sober pregnancy and that child will not have FASD. You can't control so many things like genetically with your child, your socioeconomic status, those kinds of things. But this is one thing that
you can control.
Control.
That we
yeah.
can prevent. Thank you so much. So you've talked about what we can do as individuals and as community. I mentioned this earlier, so this is where I want to talk about what you think government institutions and formal institutions can do to support parents with FASD, or also to just campaign around the prevention of alcohol consumption during pregnancy. And you can use South Africa as a case study.
I would say we've seen African countries do a ton of public health stuff. Yes, FASD doesn't have the high mortality rates of HIV and AIDS, but look at all the public health awareness they were able to create and the strategies used.
Absolutely, that's a great example.
And I know the income and, you know, there's low income in African countries. There's not the money, there's not the resources that other countries have, obviously. We're well aware of that, but look how they could do so much with, for example, HIV.
With the HIV AIDS campaign, yes.
Yeah, or absolutely, like cholera. Like there's education around all these things, and they can create public campaigns. Like everyone knows how you get cholera. I remember as a child, the newspaper would have cartoons, like drawings, like don't do this.
I remember even malaria. Like malaria is really common for myself. I'm from Nigeria, Andres from South Africa. But I remember all the campaigns around that. I also remember a campaign around tuberculosis, TB. So why can't governments utilize that same type of campaign power for FASD?
But it's about also recognizing that FASD is a public health issue. And you know, like, does the government understand the impacts? Do they understand like how this impacts incarceration rates, how this impacts, you know, employment stability, how this impacts so many things? They have to acknowledge and understand it first.
Thank you so much. So for me, I think the one and major key advice to public institutions, including the government in African countries looking to combat alcohol consumption during prenatal period, is that we need to recognize that FASD is actually a public health problem. It is a public health issue that needs to be addressed by the government sector. And I think that once we can recognize that, and then we begin using, the next step would be to actively use educational campaign to try to raise awareness and to bring that to the limelight. Because like you said, HIV is a great, excellent example that I think everyone will be able to relate to. If you can think about, even in South Africa, if we just use South Africa as a case study, right? There was the whole time when, you know, President Nelson Mandela was still around, right? And all the campaign that even happened even afterwards. So in different parts of African countries as well. So I think that's a great example that you've lent here that I feel like will lead to practical examples and to good use.
Yeah, maybe the public education will lead to those cultural shifts so that, you know, it's not about shaming or blaming or guilting anybody, but it's about creating an understanding. You shouldn't be drinking while pregnant.
Absolutely.
And then how do we support our women with addictions, right? Because alcohol addiction is actually very dangerous to just go through withdrawal, right? Medically. Seizures, all kinds of things. So, you know, how do we, and that's a separate conversation about addiction management in Africa, but it's all connected one way or another. But
and you've helped us understand that connection. So thank you so much. So before I come to the end of our conversation today, any closing remarks that you would like to provide on our conversation?
A parent will always be their child's biggest advocate. And it's a parent, I would hope a parent or the caregiver's job to advocate for in schools, in a child's life. If you know they're struggling, talk to your doctors, talk to medical professionals, ask for assessments. If you know they're struggling in school, ask for them to have an educational assessment. If you're in like a country where these tools are available and, you know, paid for, use them to your advantage.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Andrea, for being here today. This is the end of my conversation with Andrea Rasmus. I hope you have learned one or two things that will support you or support someone else in your life. So thank you so much, Andrea, for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey guys, thank you for sticking around to the end of the podcast. I truly appreciate you listening to the very end. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give the podcast a thumbs up by rating in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the podcast. You can also subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and send me your feedback over there too. Don't forget to share the podcast with your friends, family, and everyone else. I'll see you in the next episode.